Hello?
No one listens to my podcast.
Is this my 3 o'clock, Mr. Serpent?
You can call me Lord.
Okay, Mr. Serpent. What's your podcast about?
It's evil.
What?
It's an evil podcast?
Yeah, I heard you. What's the subject matter? I can't market your podcast if you don't tell me what it's about.
It'd be easier just to show you.
Oh, hold on. Someone's at my door. Did you send a story to my house?
Yes, I did. Please read it so you can market my evil podcast until we get more listeners than last podcast on the left.
Ugh, fine.
You have to read it out loud.
Why?
The podcast experience.
Fine, here we go. Roller rink rampage. Skate wheels cracked over the vintage roller rink floor like tires over dried spaghetti. Teens galumphed over the hardwood, some falling and laughing, some tripping and weeping, others skating gracefully like wheel-bedecked swans. Colorful lights and techno-adjacent music echoed around the rink like a low-rent county fair concert. Tree Forest Roller Rink was the best place in town. It was Vegetation Tate Williams' 16th birthday, and he and his class of 24 pupils were descending on the roller rink for his party. Tate had never been a sporty kid. Simply holding a football gave him hives, and he was far too short to ever ball a basket. But roller skating was made for him. His best friend, Loosely, skated behind him in tight formation. They twirled and spun as they weaved between their classmates. The two of them didn't do much fitting in with the other Tree Forest High kids, nor did they do much wanting to. Their happy place was here, amongst the sweat scent and concession stand hot dogs. But Tate's mother couldn't stand the fact that he was a lonely, lonely boy, so she'd forced him to invite everyone. To his surprise, they had all come. "Hey, losers, watch this!" Julius Orange, the class bully, shouted, clambering onto the rink. He spun thrice and bounced on one skate, cruising around the circumference of the rink as the whole class watched in awe. Tate and Loosely stared at him, aghast. "Did you know that he could do that?" Loosely asked. "No," Tate said, impressed. "I've never even seen him here." Tate and Loosely were here nearly every weekend, and never once had Julius's grumpy visage graced their pitiful eyes. And he would have noticed. After 9 years of Julius sneaking gum into his shaggy brown locks and tripping him in gym class, Tate's body was attuned to everywhere Julius was at any time. But now wasn't the time to worry about his childhood bully. Now was the time to skate. Tate's spirits rose like helium balloons as the invisible DJ fired up a brand-name bubblegum pop tune and everyone cheered again. "This is my favorite hit song by the well-known artist who made it," Loosely proclaimed. A referee clad in fluorescent orange and black stripes, like a department store tiger, came onto the rink and blew her whistle, warning all of them to skate in one direction only. Tate and Loosely led the others, sailing around the rink in circles. Another classmate, Rain Go Away, stumbled over to them, nearly falling into Tate's burgeoningly masculine chest as she took a nosedive toward the floor. Tate grabbed her, his reflexes lightning fast from years of preventing tots from falling in this very place. If you didn't know the dip was there, you'd be floor food. "Gee, thanks, Tate." Rain expressed her gratitude for the rescue, but she was cut off by Julius, who skated up behind them and dumped an extra-large brand-name soda over Tate's freshly 16-year-old head.
"Happy birthday, vegetable," he said. "Enjoy the treat."
His friends tittered as he skated off, inexplicably doing a triple-triple axel. "Damn," Rain said, watching the soda's ice slither from Tate's head down to his roller skates. Tate frowned and shook out the vintage 80s sweater he had just unwrapped that morning. It was stained with brown liquid, a now ruined relic of an era long since past. He hated Julius. That boy was rotten. He'd come here to simply torture Tate, And on his special day, no less. As Tate seethed in pathetic agony, Rain's friends, Kevin and Farina, skated up to join them. "Why don't you have your parents kick him out?" Kevin asked. "Wish I could," Tate said glumly. "But Julius's father is my father's boss, and a bully to boot. Can you imagine how badly he would bully my dad at work if I gave his rotten son his just desserts?" "What a drag," Farina said. "Well, we'll get back at him, so you don't have to. Just you wait." A mischievous expression glinted in her irises. "What are you thinking about, Far?" Rain asked. "Violence isn't the answer," Loosely added meekly. "Oh, we're not doing a violence," Farina said. "Just hold your horses. Rain and Kevin, let's go make a plan." She pulled on their sleeves and directed them toward the exit. "Are you sure?" Tate called after them. He didn't want any drama at his party, but he did want Julius to pay for being a little bastard. Kevin turned to Tate. "We'll be back in time for cake." And just like that, Tate's new allies were gone, sweeping across the rink, ignoring the referee's whistles to skate in one direction only, and out into the never-ending swamp of wooden benches and hard plastic tables. An hour into the party, Tate could feel the burn in his quadriceps, and many of his classmates had already called it a day, playing games on their name-brand cell phones on the benches. Only Tate, Loosely, Julius, and a few of his bully friends were left on the rink. The music began jumping like a skipping compact disc. "Aw, this is my favorite name brand song," Tate complained, frowning up at the ancient speakers that were sputtering out a few bass beats, but nothing more. "I'll go see if I can get it figured out," Loosely said. She skated off toward the exit, leaving Tate alone. Tate skated past a table where his parents were setting out plates and plastic foodware.
"Get your friends together, champ. It's time for cake," his father said.
Tate shrugged and skated into the middle of the rink. Hey, everybody, it's time for..." But suddenly, the cotton candy-colored lights began to flicker. The intermittent music slowed even more, sounding as if it were playing backwards. And then the screams came. The overhead lights began to strobe, and soon Tate couldn't see anything. He tried to skate to the rink's exit, but he just kept hitting his classmates, bodies rubbing upon bodies like sardines squashed into a tin. The screams got louder, high-pitched and long. Tate rubbed his eyes to get them to work. It was then that Tate saw him. A man with wild hair, wearing a faded, flattened birthday hat. He was, peculiarly, wearing canvas loafers on his feet and two clean, new-looking roller skates on his hands. He wielded a butcher's knife between his yellow teeth. And he was chasing Julius and his friends right on their tails. Though Julius, when skating, was swift as a sparrow, this wild-eyed maniac was swifter. With a great impact, Julius skated into Tate, grabbing Tate's shoulders to stop himself.
"You gotta help us! There's a psycho after us!" he screamed. "All I did was only bully him a little bit!"
Tate looked between Julius and the madman, trying to get his mind to take in what was happening. But before he could even form a thought, the man sprinted up behind Julius, flung his face toward Julius's back, and stabbed him right between his scapulas with his mouth knife. Julius gurgled, falling down Tate's body like the soda he'd poured less than an hour before. Tate screamed as he looked from dying boy to psycho killer. Everyone rushed toward the rink exit like a stampede of wheeled, screeching buffalo. But Tate couldn't move. He was frozen in terror, looking the killer right in his insane eyes.
"I never got invited to birthday parties,"
the man wheezed, his voice slithering like a slimy snail. Tate said nothing, just screamed and joined his scampering classmates.
We have to get out of here! Everyone off the rink!
He corralled the stragglers and ushered them through the exit while the murderer just stood there, watching the flow of delicious blood trickle from Julius's gaping wound. Lucy hopped over the wall and onto the rink, joining Tate in his attempts to save everyone.
Come on!
Tate looked around. He didn't see Rain, Farina, or Kevin anywhere. And then a little flicker of hope ignited in his stomach. Maybe this was a prank. Farina's revenge prank. Maybe Julius wasn't dead. Maybe the murderer was just the three of them in a trench coat. But Tate looked at the murderer. He wasn't wearing a trench coat. He was wearing 90s palazzo pants and an oversized black and white button-up t-shirt with a dragon on the back. This couldn't be the three of them. And judging by Julius's unmoving body, drizzling hemoglobin out onto the waxed floor like an uncorked bottle of cherry syrup, this wasn't a prank. This was a roller rink rampage. Tate noticed, too late, that the referee was still on the rink, staring fearfully at the slasher. He ran toward her, right down the middle of the rink.
Skate in one direction!
She shouted at him, her voice quavering. She picked up her whistle to blow it, but the man smacked her across the face with his left-hand skate. The referee dropped her whistle and reached up to touch the wheel prints on her face, shaking in fear. The man smacked her from the other side with his other skate. Her fragile face bones crushed from the pressure, and she crumpled onto the rink like a sack of blood potatoes, her head splatting against the floor with a loud bang. The most crimson of liquids, that being blood, seeped out of the referee's head and into the floor's cracks, running down the inexplicable pits in the hardwood and coming right toward Tate. Tate rushed off the rink, nearly falling, something he hadn't done since he was a very young boy. Everyone else was already gone, and as his knee brushed the wood, Lucy reached down and pulled him up by his collar, yanking him to safety. Tate ran into the storage room near the concession stand and caught his breath. The closet was full of age-old rental skates, balloon-printed napkins, and torn birthday banners, a macabre sight in the midst of this horrific party. Everyone else from the party was already here too, Tate's parents included.
There's no back door! We're trapped! Jessica S. yelled.
Everyone was screaming now, panicking. And then, the door they'd all rushed through opened in on them. Everyone held their breath, expecting the murderer. But it was just Rain, Farina, and Kevin.
What the fuck is going on out there, man? Farina shouted.
So it wasn't you? Tate asked, the last of his hope flickering out like a murdered firefly.
Of course not, Kevin yelled. We barely got in here before he got us.
Tate was panicking, and though he was 16 and often tried to pretend he was an adult man, he looked to his parents for help. His father had his mother wrapped in his arms, and his mother looked despondent. It's him, Tate's mother said. Patient 342. What? Tate asked, confused. His mother was a psychiatrist at the Tree Forest Insane Asylum for crazy boys and girls. It did not bode well that she knew this man by name. He escaped this morning, she said quietly. I got a text. She held out her phone to Tate. A text message read only, "He escaped." So, what's his problem? Tate asked. How do we stop him? Lucy added. He has a fixation with birthday parties, Tate's mother explained in psychoanalyst mode. When he turned 16, he hosted a birthday party and nobody came because someone else in his class had a party on the same day. He then went to that birthday party, killed everyone. Lucy gasped. Tate's stomach felt like it might make its way up his esophagus, out of his body, and then crawl away. His father was reeling, too, from this horrific news. Tate needed a plan.
They couldn't all just sit in this storage room forever while his bully and the referee rotted out on that rink and a murderer lurked right outside. He hit the deck and peeked out under the narrow gap between door and floor. The murderer was looming over his birthday cake. "What do you see?" Loosely asked. "He's eating the cake," Tate said, confused. His mother nodded. That's very typical of his condition. And sure enough, the murderer was grabbing the birthday cake in sticky handfuls and shoving it into his maw like he'd never before tasted that sweet caress of pure sugar. A chill twisted down Tate's spine. He's never been to a birthday party, so maybe if we invite him in, he'll let us out of here alive. "Are you crazy, Vegetation?" his mother whispered. His classmates murmured in agreement. They all thought Tate was crazy. Hell, Tate felt crazy. But maybe this was their only chance. They'd never get out of this closet and to the exits without at least one more of them being stabbed or horribly blunt force traumatized with a roller skate. Without listening to the protestations, Tate pushed open the door and skated across the room toward the table, where his cake sat disturbed in this disturbed man's hands. Hi, he began. Patient 342 threw down the cake and slurped up his knife in his deranged lips. "Wait, I'm Tate. It's my birthday."
"You didn't invite me,"
the man roared, melted icing dripping from his grotesque teeth. "I didn't know who you were," Tate replied. The man growled like a hungry lion and picked up his roller skate. He slipped his hand inside, cake chunks spurting out of the sides of it, and ran at Tate with the skate poised to smack him across the forehead. "Wait," Tate said, putting up his hands to shield himself. "Skate with me." Patient 342 stopped. He just stared at Tate, as if not computing. The white icing mixed with the blood on his free hand, creating the scariest shade of pink Tate had ever seen.
You can skate with us," Tate said, prying his eyeballs away from the sight.
The man looked him up and down, considering. Then he nodded. Relief streamed into Tate's body. "Okay. Let me go and get the others. It's not a party with just two people." He laughed nervously, then skated backwards toward the closet. The murderer began to follow Tate, knife protruding from between his incisors.
"Maybe leave the knife," Tate said. To his surprise,
the killer dropped it, like a dog dropping a squeak toy. Tate led his stiff classmates around the stiffer bodies that lay in the middle of the rink, like dead, stringless puppets. His classmates wanted to be anywhere but here, and Tate did too, but they still had 2 hours left of the party. 2 hours left of pretending this was all fine. Then they could go home, alive. Patient 342 walked at the back of the group, staggering and moving his head to the music, though he was completely offbeat. His roller skates were still on his hands like roller gloves.
"Balloons!"
he suddenly shouted. Tate looked at him, confused.
"Where are the balloons?"
the killer said again, this time with deadly rage, threatening Tate with a skate. Tate knew he had to find balloons, and fast. He motioned to his parents, who were standing tense and terrified by the now-smashed cake. He pointed at the buoyant silver 16 balloons, and they handed them over the rink border. Tate sped over to grab them and thrust them toward the killer. Ta-da! The killer's mouth twisted into a messed-up, slimy imitation of a grin. But as patient 342 took the balloons in his hand, grabbing them by the Mylar, he popped them both with his roller skate wheels. Everyone gasped, startled and frozen in place by the horrific sound. The music stopped.
"You did that on purpose!"
Patient 342 yelled. No, Tate insisted. It's just that skates don't make very good hands. The man raised a skate toward Tate's face again, but the lights began to flicker. Lucy rushed to Tate's aid, bravely stepping between him and patient 342. Tate feared the blinking lights, feared more roller skating serial killers were coming to get them. But the monster beside him looked confused too. All of a sudden, Tate's peers looked up into the ceiling beams. Rain, Farina, and Kevin were stopping them from going any further around the rink. Everyone, turn around! Go the other way! Rain said. But the murderer didn't stop. He kept pushing past Tate and Lucy in a rage. He ended up right beneath a bucket nestled in the rafters. As if in slow motion, the bucket tipped, and 10 gallons of viscous, red, name-brand slushy syrup spewed out onto the murderer's head, soaking him like a crimson waterfall. Everyone gasped. Tate stared in horror.
That was our revenge prank,
Farina said, voice quaking. The killer looked around at Tate's classmates, his hair matted and cherry-scented, every last bit of his filthy clothes stained scarlet.
Oh no,
Tate stammered, trying to approach the man. Come with me. We'll get you cleaned up. This was just a big mistake. But the man's only response was a roar, like an angry dragon caught between a rock and a hard place. Tate stepped back as the man shook like a dog, raining sticky food coloring juice onto the skaters. Then the rampage began again. He ran toward the crowd, bashing the students in their heads, their very lifeblood mixing with the sweet, liquid sugar. It was soon impossible to tell what was blood and what was a deconstructed slushy. He bashed one of Tate's classmates on the skull, then another, and they fell to the floor, moaning in pain. Some didn't move at all. More dead, more of this terrifying man's victims. Somehow, inexplicably, patient 342 suddenly had another knife. He jammed it into Kevin's neck. Kevin fell to the ground, gurgling, dead. Tate's new friend wiped out just like that. Lucy cried and rushed to the ground at Kevin's side, along with Rain and Farina. Lucy loosed the knife from Kevin's back, but still, he didn't move. Tate was horrified. He had tried to play nice, but this was too much. They had to run. He grabbed Lucy's arm tightly, then scooped Rain and Farina into their hoard and skated as fast as he'd ever skated before to the rink's exit. Squeaks, bangs, and squelches echoed behind them. Tate couldn't see what was happening, but he knew. Oh, he knew. As Tate tried to reach the door, his father's shout stopped him mid-glide.
It's me you want, he screamed. I was the one who had my birthday party on the same day as yours.
Tate looked at his father in shock. His mother was staring, too, equally as stunned.
What are you talking about, dear? She asked.
You're the cause of this man's trauma?
I didn't mean to,
Tate's father cried.
It was the only Saturday of the month that we could book the town pool. I had no idea that one choice would do this. So kill me. Take your revenge out on me, Jimmy.
With awe-inspiring flexibility, patient 342, Jimmy, launched himself over the rink's half wall and toward Tate's father. He hit him once in the face, twice, a third time, as if Tate's father's very skull was a punching bag. He instantly had wheel-shaped bruises. His nose dripped blood. One eye protruded from its socket. Tate couldn't watch. He had lost his school bully and the referee and Kevin and many other classmates. He couldn't lose his father, too. He grabbed a dinosaur-shaped skate helper from the floor and whipped it at Jimmy. It smashed into his knee pits, and he plummeted to the floor, his knife flying directly into Tate's father's hands. Do something! Tate yelled to his father. Jimmy was trying to use his hands to get up, but encased in skates as they were, he kept slipping on mashed cake and falling back down onto his stomach like a sprawled-out starfish. Now was the opportune time to strike, but his father couldn't do it. He shook as he moved the knife closer and closer to Jimmy. The distraction Tate had caused allowed his living classmates to get to the door. They ran out of the building, and Tate encouraged his friends to follow. Go! Now's your chance! He said to Loosely, Rain, and Farina.
But what about you?
Loosely asked. I have to stay here with my parents, Tate said bravely. After all, for much of his life, his parents had been his only friends. He owed them something. He hugged his friends goodbye, all of them swapping little bits of syrup and carnage from their own bodies onto each other's. And off they ran to safety. Tate took a deep breath and pulled off his brand new roller skates. They were his most prized possession, but he'd seen the killer use skates as weapons to much success, so he thought he should try the same. He stomped, stocking-footed, toward the murderer, who was still slipping and falling like a fawn on ice. But a booming voice from the doorway halted him.
Stop! Don't smack! The voice said.
Tate stopped and looked at the doorway, where three men in white jumpsuits that said, Asylum Security, burst into the building.
Oh, thank goodness you're here!
Tate's mother screamed. Dr. Williams, one security guard said, confused. Are you all right?
I am now, Tate's mother said. I tried to stop him, Tate said, shock finally taking hold. I told him he was invited to my birthday party, and I hoped that would make him happy.
There is no happy, son. This man is criminally insane, the guard said, scooping Jimmy up and nearly slipping on the frosting himself. Another security guard from the doorway spoke up. He's been stuck in a delusion for 3 decades, ever since he was 16.
I'm 16, Tate said quietly.
Tate looked at the murderer, Jimmy, who was now being pulled to his feet. He was covered in blood, cherry syrup, cake, and icing, just like Tate.
My roller skates!
He yelled as they carted him away.
I'm powerless without my roller skates!
Tate looked at Jimmy's brand new skates lying on the floor, covered in the blood of Tate's fellow teens. They had never been worn before today. And Tate looked at his own in his hands. He dropped them to the floor. Maybe his parents were right. Maybe friends were the key to a good life, not roller skates. If this was what roller skating did to people, he would never do it again. Let's go home, Tate said, and never come back here.
So, what did you think of my evil story?
I fear that if this is what you're peddling, you're never going to get people to listen to your podcast.
What? Listen, lady, I'm paying you a hefty amount of money.
This is a free consultation.
To help make my podcast the biggest horror podcast in the entire world. So if you want me to keep paying you, then do your job.
Okay, fine. Mr. Serpent, I'm sure horror fans would love your podcast. But building an audience takes time. The last podcast on the left wasn't built in a day.
Mm-hmm.
The key to becoming successful is being patient. I'm happy to work with you and help you along the way.
I was hoping you'd say that. Say, what is your wrist size?
What?
I need to make sure I have a cuff that will fit.
It sounded like you said cuff?
Sorry, I'm so tired. It just hit me. I can barely keep my eyes open.
Ah, all part of my plan.
What do you mean?
That story you read. Well, that was an invisible sleeping poison on it that my ghoul Steve concocted. Speaking of Steve, that's him now.
What? Did you say a ghoul?
Let him in.
I getting very sleepy.
Drats. She's already asleep. Steve, you'll just have to bring... Oh, damn it, she was wearing headphones. Steve? Steve, can you hear me? Steve! Steve, you have to break in! You'll have to... Oh. Damn, I guess he'll figure it out eventually. This episode was performed by Dana Sales and Lord Serpent. It was edited by Stacey Milbourne, Michael Morgan, and Lord Serpent. It was written by Stacey Milbourne and Lord Serpent. It was produced by Stacey Milbourne, Michael Morgan, Charles Brock, and Lord Serpent. Michael Morgan and Lord Serpent were the audio engineers. The music was composed by Charles Brock and Lord Serpent. Tune in next week for even more horrific tales of evil. Be sure to follow me on Instagram at Lord Serpent's Library and check out my homepage at rss.com/podcasts/Lord Serpent's Library.